Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
Okay, everybody. So I appeared on Adam Taggart's new program called Thoughtful Money. I was interviewed yesterday. I don't know when the video is going to come out. Probably going to come out before the weekend. But for my podcast audience, I want to go over some of the things that I talked about. So that's what this week's podcast is going to be about. And let's start out with how I started out on the interview. And I said, you know, if you love this country, and I do, you must be disappointed and angry and even a bit frightened about the future of it. And the reason is because the government has destroyed, past tense, destroyed, not destroying, it has destroyed the middle class of this country. Now, the reason why they did this is because the Fed is composed of a bunch of feckless politicians. They're not necessarily nefarious, but they're egomaniacs that seek power. And the Fed has a fiat currency. They decided that they wanted to remove gold from the scenario. They didn't vote on it. We didn't have a vote on it. American citizens didn't have a vote on it. They just said arbitrarily and capriciously that, hey, gold is not going to be part of the monetary system, and we're going to have a 100% fiat currency. And that means that they printed away every bear market and recession since 1987. And I think they think of themselves as demigods. Like, you know how there's 12 voting members of the FOMC, 12 apostles of Jesus, and the Fed statements are meant to be read like you're parsing scripture. They speak cryptically, like they have some kind of omniscience. They're not omniscient. Again, they're just feckless politician. And because they have this fiat, this currency, they printed away every recession and bear market, as I said, and that eventually engendered unserviceable levels of debt, because when money is cheap or virtually free, people borrow a lot of it. And that led to unstable asset prices and a complete bifurcation of the United States, where you have the middle class has been eviscerated. You have very poor, poor and very poor, people barely making it, 78% of Americans living paycheck to paycheck. And then you have the one percenters, the top echelon, the multimillionaires. So the Fed, here's the problem. Here's the problem today. The Fed, just bring it to what's happening in the situation now. The Fed is now claiming inflation is quiescent and that monetary policy is tight. That's what they're claiming right now. Even though credit spreads are tight and getting tighter, financial conditions are loose and getting looser, inflation is far above the Fed's 2% target, their warped definition of stable prices. It's heading further away from 2% to the upside. CPI was 3.5% in March. It was 3.2% in February. Consumer price inflation has been above 2% for 3 years. Three entire years of the Fed missing its target to the north. Commodity prices are surging. Wall Street Journal says food prices are up 37% in the past 4 years, outpacing incomes by a whole heck of a lot. Buying a home, being able to afford to purchase a home has become completely out of reach. First-time home buyers can't do it. In this scenario, the FOMC, the 12 apostles of the FOMC and its head, Powell, are hell-bent on easing monetary policy and bolstering the rate of inflation from here. And you have to ask yourself, why? Why would they take such a stance? And the truth is that Powell and the FOMC know, they understand, that vast swaths of the banking system, consumers, businesses, and government debt is unserviceable at 5% plus borrowing costs. And the economy continues to cycle debt at much higher rates, and Powell is now pooping his pants. So, for example, banks' holdings of mortgage-backed securities, commercial mortgage-backed securities, treasurers, they're all underwater. They're underwater and getting more so underwater as rates rise. And consumers are loaded with debt. There's $20 trillion in consumer debt. That's up from $15.6 trillion in 2019. 40% of the Russell 2000 is unprofitable. Corporate debt is up to $13.7 trillion. That's up over 100% since 2007. It's a record percentage of GDP, 49%. Corporate defaults soared by 80% in 2023. $1.8 trillion needs to be refinanced by the end of 2025. There's a record $1.3 trillion in credit card debt. Delinquencies are up over 100% since 2021, the highest since 2012. Auto loan delinquencies are the highest in a decade. CLOs, which are securitized pools of leveraged loans, it was $300 billion in 2008. It's $1.4 trillion today, a 366% increase. Private credit, which are loans to businesses who can't get a loan from the bank or issue corporate debt, totaled $100 billion prior to the global financial crisis. Now it's $1.7 trillion. The government is paying $1 trillion in interest payments in 2025. For reference, in 2007, the entire deficit was $160 billion. Total U.S. debt to GDP is 123%. It was 60% before of GDP prior to the global financial crisis. The national debt is 733% of revenue, and we're adding 42% of all of our yearly revenue to the debt. A fifth of all revenue now is spent on interest. So the total U.S. non-financial debt to GDP was 227% prior to the global financial crisis. Now it's 263%. Rate hikes work with a lag. And guess what? The Fed stopped hiking rates in the summer of 2023. And a year later, the market should fall apart. That's the history. Once the Fed stops hiking rates, about a year passes, the market peaks and the economy peaks. We're right on schedule here. And by the way, people are run around saying, you know, the economy's strong. They forget we had a recession in manufacturing, in earnings, and in the stock market. Manufacturing sector contracted for the past 16 out of the last 17 months. We've had four quarters of negative year-over-year earnings growth. The Russell 2000 fell by 35% from the end of 21 to October of 23. And since the end of 21, the equal weight S&P 500 is unchanged. The Dow Jones Transportation Average is down 8%. The Russell 2000 is down 20%. The NASDAQ is down 2%. The regional banking sector is down 40%, and bonds are down 40%, long-duration bonds. So we had a recession. We came out of it for a little bit. Now we're going back into one. Why do I say that? Well, the index of leading economic indicators is down 21 of the past 22 months. The National Federation of Independent Small Businesses, their optimism index has 27 consecutive months below the 50-year average of 98. Household net interest income dropped by $200 billion in the current Fed tightening cycle. Consumers have a lot more floating rate debt, and they have more dividend income than interest income. 10-year minus 2-year yield curve spread is the longest inversion in history, and it's nearly a perfect recession predictor. Since 1955, the one exception was 1965. We didn't have a recession, but GDP growth fell from 10% to 0.2%. We have a positive real Fed funds rate for longer than a year. That's always led to recessions since 2000. Personal corporate bankruptcies are up 19 months in a row. We have the most corporate defaults in Q1 of 2004 since the global financial crisis began. The S&P Global U.S. Composite Index in April saw an overall reduction in new orders for the first time in 6 months. Companies responded by scaling back employment for the first time in almost 4 years. And bank lending and money supply growth are contracting. And in this scenario, the stock market valuation is on Fantasy Island. I often talk about how the real estate market is off the charts price-wise, and then when you add in taxes and insurance and maintenance costs, totally unaffordable for most people. But the stock market's price to sales is 2.8. The median is 1.5. Total market cap to GDP is now 180%. That ratio should be under 100. In 1929, it was 117%. In 2000, it was 142%. In 2007, it was 104%. Those are the previous bubble peaks. Now it's 188. Stock market is 40% overvalued. U.S. households now allocate 40% of their assets to stocks, the highest since 2000. Equity risk premium is negative, lowest in 24 years. You know, you take the earnings yield minus treasuries. It's negative. There's $1.5 trillion in commercial real estate loans coming due in the next 2 years. So, listen, I'm not trying to say all this to scare you. I'm just saying that we have massive bubbles in stocks. We have a massive bubble in real estate. And the timing for when it pops is crucial for when you want to be able to stop profiting on the upside of the bubble. You sit on the sidelines. You have to make money while you're waiting. But you also want to protect and potentially profit from the collapse of these bubbles. I think the U.S. stock market is reminiscent of China's 2007 and Japan's 1989 bubbles. The Shanghai Composite Index, this is for people who always say, you know, it's time in the market. The market always goes up, blah, blah, blah. No, the stock markets don't always go up. It's not true in the United States. It's not true globally. The Chinese Shanghai Composite Index is down 45% since 2007. That's 17 years. And after 17 years, you're down by 45%. And that's in nominal terms. The Nikkei Dow is down 5% after 35 years. It finally broke even and then started to crash again. So after 35 years of waiting to get your money back, you're down 5%. This is China and Japan. The laws of economics don't stop at the shores of the United States. Bubbles pop with devastating consequences. So yeah, it's not something to be scared of. It's how do you protect and profit from it? What does the Fed and Treasury do? If the Fed and Treasury allowed market forces to function, then the stock market and home prices would drop by 40%. But they're not going to let that happen. The Fed and Treasury will not let that happen. So what they're going to do is launch another round sooner or later. I don't know when. Once the recession phase two hits and the stock market falls apart, they'll come back with more QE, more ZERP, more bank term funding programs. You know, they'll blow up the Fed's balance sheet once again. But they're going to do that in a context of inflation that's way above their target. So that has huge ramifications for stagflation. So look for dramatic and chaotic swings between deflation and inflation in the near future, which will grow more frequently and with greater intensity over time. Well, that is going to conclude our financial portion of this podcast. So if you don't want to listen to what I have to say after this, you could always just stop listening. But I was thinking of the total eclipse of the sun that occurred a couple of weeks ago. And I find it remarkable that we are the only intelligent life in our galaxy or even in the universe that we know of. We're sending radio signals out, travel close to the speed of light. No response yet. So for a great deal of distances, we are the only intelligent life, and that's outside the FOMC, of course, but we're the only intelligent life in the universe. And in that context, we have a satellite, a moon, that covers the sun every, 20 years or so perfectly. It doesn't cover it by 90% or 110%. It covers it by 99.99%. So it's virtually 100%. So what happens is that the sun is about 400 times bigger than the moon, which is also about 400 times further away. The sun is about 400 times further away. Now, scientists call this a cosmic coincidence. But I believe that God is a spirit. He leaves his fingerprints if you look for them. And I think it's not a coincidence. I think it's doesn't prove the existence of God, but it shows his fingerprint is there. Not evidence that proves 100% that God exists, but it greatly increases the odds that this is all an intelligent design. And just wanted to make that point. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.